All right, folks, welcome back to the mailbag on the Super Tuesday recap. This is your host Chris and Deepom here. We are here, like we do at the end of every month, it's the end of February, and we take listener emails and we talk about some topics of news items that happened during the month of February. So, you said we got no new reviews to read off of iTunes, so we're going to jump right into the emails. And I'm already not liking this first.
I'm loving this first one.
I don't like this one. Imani writes in, February mailbag, Chris ruined Black History Month, which just feels like, I don't know.
I want that on a shirt. I want that on a shirt.
I work so hard to bring podcasts to you all, and this is the thanks I get. So we've all been wondering why this Black History Month has been so trash. Then it hit me. You really had Deepom and Joy as the only two guests this month?
I want to stop here. My episode, only good things happen. Not only, but good things happen. Blackface happened. But others beyond that.
Yeah, it's all you know what? You know
I'm
what?
I want you
to think about what you just said there, that you had the good show where the worst thing that happened was blackface.
Well, in my defense, my episode was like very early in the month.
True. It really was. It was like the beginning of the month. Man, yeah. I'm telling you, man,
my episode was the second, Chris.
Look, I'm not gonna lie. I like the idea of doing the Intangic every other week now because it gives me more time when I don't book like five other podcasts that weekend. But like at the same time, like, man, like we were like, oh man, Justin Fairfax, can't wait for him to come back. And then it was like, ooh, by the time Monday hit, it was like, ooh, a little outdated.
Did not age well in two days. That aged like potato salad.
Right. Had Joy on, was like, man, this Jesse Smollett thing, man, you guys need to, you know, believe victims. Monday comes, it's like, ooh, he's been arrested for lying. It's like, oh boy, man, it's a little bit. I gotta.
That one's never ending.
Anyone knows,
I have said 0% of things on any internet about this because I'm just so confused.
Yeah, I'm back up. Anyway, this is not. We don't talk about insanity check stuff on the mailbox.
No,
we never had a chance.
Not a happy boy.
And I hear his objections now, but I'm not the one who called his spot for the post election show in 2016. You know what you did there? Just take this L and sit there with it. Oh, damn it.
Fair.
Then again, looking at the new poster, that may be the same advice someone gave Fox about Dark Phoenix. You have a thrice delayed sequel that nobody cares about, and your genius marketing move is tight, closer to Brett Ratner's X3. What's the move here? Then again, I've been asking that since the reboot, not a reboot, go fuck yourself, that was first class. There is no plan, and there never was one. Maybe Carol needs to come and save the X-Men the way that Claremont came and rescued her. Yes, Claremont.
Can we talk about this for a second? I know it's probably a topic later, but I think we can get a lot of this done now. I've started calling Dark Phoenix Last Stand again.
I mean...
And it's pretty crisp what they're doing. And Last Stand wasn't very, very good. And somehow, this is my favorite comment I saw on the IO9 server, is that somehow Brett Ratner is only the second most terrible person to direct the X-Men movie.
Which is... God, I saw that too, and I was like,
"Son of a bitch!" Like, oh, I would have lost that bet. I would have lost that bet.
Right? I was about to object, and I was like, "Oh, but no, that is right." But here's the thing, though. That also, I think people are looking over to with this. You know, people are saying that they're pulling too much from Last Stand and X3 and things like that. But think about the name of X3. It was called Last Stand. And is there a more appropriate name for this Dark Phoenix movie than Last Stand? Because it is about to be literally the last stand of Fox having control, creator control over the X-Men.
It should be called Sunk Cost, like we've already paid for it. We have to release it, which is something they're not calling New Mutants.
Yo, I don't know who the actress is, but she was asked about it.
She plays Magic. I don't know who she actually is, but she plays Liana in the movie.
She was asked about it. The look she gave on her face was basically like, your guess is as good as mine? I don't know if it's ever coming.
Right.
Things happen.
Yeah. I say she plays Liana in the movie. She plays Liana in whatever they filmed. I don't know if it's a movie.
Right.
I do know I have to see it.
Movie is a strong word there.
But even more than Dark Phoenix, I need to see New Mutants. Like, I don't think it should be released, but I think it should leak on the internet like that original...
The Roger Corman.
I think it's Roger Corman's Fantastic Four.
I'm
really sad that I had Roger Corman like right in my head, just super available. That's not a great thing for me.
So funny thing about this, right? I actually think you're joking, but I think that can probably happen, because here's the thing. They've already sunk the cost in it, right? And when that Fantastic Four movie came out, there was no other option. There was no other way of releasing it. There was no other medium to release things on. They could absolutely release this on, you know, Hulu, I'm thinking. I mean, I doubt Disney would put it on their Disney service. They might just throw it up there because somebody might watch it. Like, there might be somebody out there who distributes it. Shit, they might even just throw a bone to Netflix and say, like, here, you can take out our trash now, right? Something like that could actually happen, because they've done it. We don't realize this, but they've done it before. People forget the Mowgli film that came out on Netflix late last year. It was supposed to be a Warner Brothers release in the theaters movie. It was Andy Serkis's Jungle Book version of the Jungle Book. It was supposed to come out in the theaters. Then the first Jungle Book came out from Disney and made $900 million fucking dollars. And they said, maybe we should hold off on releasing ours. So they delayed it for 2 years, and then they quietly released it out on Netflix. Like, we're joking, but if New Mutants is a finish, whatever the fuck, it could actually end up being like, just dump it out, whatever we got. Dump it on Netflix, dump it on Hulu. Somebody, it's content, somebody will watch it. We recouped our costs some kind of way, right? It could actually, I actually think that is probably the more likely solution at this point with New Mutants, because I don't think anybody will distribute it, but it is a finished movie. And finding someone to release it on streaming gets you something back versus if you just hold on to it and don't release it at all. So... yeah,
I hope you, for my sense of humor, I hope you're right.
Yeah, I mean, no, I want to see it too.
I have to know.
I don't want to pay for it, but I want to see it.
I'm not going to pay for it. The same way I didn't pay for Wolverine Origins, my friends torrented it, and I watched the 80% done being rendered cut. I never saw the real one. I'm good.
Good enough. But speaking of half reboots, what is the Transformer franchise doing? This is up your alley. If Bumblebee was supposed to be a fresh start, then why did you hold back on showing Megatron and giving us more Optimus? I know why they made Bumblebee the entry character, even though it's stupid, but there was no reason to hold Travis Knight's hands back if you're going in a new direction. This just sounds like the same book of excuses they tried after we gave them a pass for the writer strike ruining Transformers 2. Since I know DPOM has a pitch in his head, if you were trying to start your trilogy for Transformers, how would you launch a franchise? Now, before you answer that last part, I will say
first things first.
Yeah, first things first. They first classed it.
Well, so I haven't seen Bumblebee. Despite everyone thought was going to happen, I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, you held strong. I'm not going to lie. You haven't seen Bumblebee?
I heard like two or three things. I was like, out of sight, out of mind. If I pretend it doesn't exist, I won't see it.
You didn't see Bumblebee. You haven't seen Aquaman. Like, you... Nope. Wow, you... Like, I had those as oh, we're definitely going to be doing spoiler reviews for these, and we never did them because DPOM never saw
them. I never saw them.
I was like, well, no point...
Like, it's always a lot of people like, I'm not watching this, who are... I don't mean it. Like, I said both those things like once or twice. I'm not going to watch those movies. And lo and behold, I'm not going to pay to see a DC movie in the theater. Chris, I fucking refuse.
Don't blame me.
It will hit streaming. I might rent it on Amazon for $4.99 one night. But paying money to see Aquaman was never going to happen.
Hold that thought, because that's going to come up later on when we talk about something else. But yes.
Awesome. Look, they hedge their bets. It's not some conspiracy. It's not some, this is always the plan. They wanted to see the reception before they went all in. And it's smart. It's safe. Those Transformers movies, we hate them because we have eyes. But I guess a lot of blind people love them because they make billions of dollars. And so for them to come in and say, hey, that billion-dollar cash cow, yeah, fuck that. We shot it. Here's Bumblebee. That's a really cocky, really dumb move. So, of course, they hedged. But it worked. has succeeded, and now we need more G1 goodness, which will result in me buying way too many Transformers, which is great for no one except for Hasbro.
Yeah. I mean, I understand, because to me, it frustrated me as well, because I'm like, yo, if you say it gave me flashbacks of the First Class thing again, where it's like, yeah. If you had told me up front that it was a reboot, you would have gotten me in the theater. But what D-Pom is saying here is also right, which is, like, you can say that all you want. And again, this is going to come up later when we talk about some other films that I do not like and I think are trash, but made a bunch of money. They're going to go with money. And so you can't just come out there and say, fuck Michael Bay's movies if you're running. Well, no, I'm sorry. You can't say that if you are the business. As fans, as
audience, right. No. Say that. As Paramount, fuck that.
Right.
They should be filleting Michael Bay.
And I think that's one thing that I myself also am trying to come to terms with when I look at these things. From my point of view, some of these things are complete fucking failures. But as the business or studio running them, they are absolutely successes.
So this, like, is interesting, because, like, I'm ahead of you on this curve because I'm a Transformers fan. So, like, I'll be able to help you through this, because I had to come to that. It's like, and it just, it happens. What'll happen for you is you'll dive harder into the comics, into other media that you enjoy, because what you have to realize is that clearly it's for somebody. It's just not for me.
Here,
like, when Optimus Prime riding Grimlock should have me in the theater. It's for somebody. It's clearly not for me.
Well, here's the thing. It's again teasing something we're gonna talk about later on, but it's where I'm at with, I was where I was with the X-Men movies, and where I'm at now with the DC movies. I'm getting more into reading the comics on both of those. I got more into reading the X-Men comics because the X-Men movies were so fucking garbage. It drove me back into reading X-Men comics. And then the DC movies have been so underwhelming me for almost a decade now. You know,
when was Green Lantern? It's more than a decade.
Green Lantern was 2011. Wasn't it?
Horseshit, really?
Yeah, it was 2011. So so almost a decade. So it's 8 years. God. So it's been 8 years. I've been so underwhelmed, you know, with what they're doing and making excuses that now I went back to reading the comics and also hoped that we're doing this comic, this character corners. Now I realize, I'm like, yo, like, I look at people. I'll come back to this. We'll save this for later on. But anyway, I'm sorry. Do the last thing when there's your pitch for the franchise.
For trilogy, it's tough. I wish you'd have sent me this email earlier today.
Okay, you know what? Let's save this. We'll do it next time.
No. I'm fine. I got this. I think you have to start on Earth, just because otherwise people won't buy in. So I'd do probably a variation of the first three episodes to be the first movie. And then I would end the war. Two would be our empire, and three would be the fall of Megatron. And I think you can do that. I think you can start small. I think even if you want to do most of what I heard Bumblebee is, but at the end have the Autobots take him back into space to continue fighting on Cybertron, and then just tell the story from there. I think you can do that. I think that there's room to tell a story where it's just the robots. I think a transition movie is probably necessary, but I think that as you watch some of these other movies that are happening across film, the idea of telling a story with just robots can, one, be done, and two, the technology's finally there for what I'm hearing. When I hear about the movie, it's to the tech there to do it.
Yeah, no, yeah. Between that and Alita, the technology is there.
That's really what I was. I was trying to obliquely mention Alita, because from what I heard, it's a beautiful movie, not very good, but beautiful.
It's
it shows that you can do the CGI with weight. And apparently, Bumblebee is really well done, too. Like, really technically well done movie.
Yeah, no. Bumblebee looks good. I didn't like the story beats of it. But but here's the thing. Even if you block out the original trilogy and you look at it as just a reboot and going, okay, this is their Transformers 1. This is their pitch to all of us. That you can do a Transformers film, then Bumblebee is fine. As you said, I came in with the weight of all the other movies in it before it, and not knowing, are you guys going to do like they did with the X-Men movies and then try to connect back to that bullshit? Because if you are, you're just tricking me. Fuck you. I'm out. I've been hurt before. I've been hurt before. So,
imagine if Michael Bay was allowed to make a bunch of Batman movies. That's how I feel. So, how about you move on about how you've been hurt before? Michael Bay's had my childhood by the throat since 2007.
God damn it. He's not wrong. And I know MTR Network is getting ready to take home the gold in 2022 for curling. But did you see
Fran? How about you stop being so loud?
Yo, here's the funny thing. Reading this, it reminded me, it was a story I was supposed to bring up on the Insanity Check, or the next time I was on UD Pod. It was the story of the curling team that got drunk. And I was like, this is me and Depop.
How could you tell it's curling? I thought drinking was like part of the pregame. I thought you had to be drunk to play.
I thought you had to.
I'll be way better now.
I thought you had to blow over the limit to even be qualified.
If you can't drive, that's how you can play. That's the rules we always play back at home. Anyway.
You can't drive home, so you just slide home. Yes.
Yeah. That's when curling started.
Yeah.
You guys, God.
All right,
stop.
Fuck. I both hate and love that sport. Did you see France made lightsaber dueling an official sport? I did. I mean, somebody has to be there to beat the French. Appreciate all the great work. Yeah, I did.
Okay, I have an admission. I've thought way too much about that. Mm-hmm. And I got to think that I'm a modified 4 and 5 user. Shout out to my Star Wars nerds. And I don't think it'd be useful in non-force-aided combat. So I'm not going to be entering in the competition.
I mean, yeah, but it looks cool. I'll watch.
Oh, it looks great. I'm talking about me. Look, I'm very selfishly like, Chinese. Can I do this? 4 and 5 doesn't work in a non-force-aided setting. It just doesn't.
Love it.
It's a power form. It's very dependent on broad strikes and downward blows. It doesn't work in a duel. It's, anyway, you go.
And it says, P.S., with the Hardy Boys reuniting on SmackDown, I need y'all to stop lying to yourselves and just let me know if this inevitable nostalgia wrestling podcast is dropping before Mania so I can make room on my calendar.
Listen. So I haven't talked to you about this, I have a plan.
Oh, God damn it.
See, the show would start after Mania. I would wait for post-Mania season because that's when all the casuals are in and we'll get all the nostalgia pops and we release our first, like, I'm going to be reaching out to you in the next couple of weeks because we're going to do a pilot where it's no one will hear it but us, but I want to see if we can make this work where we just watch wrestling together.
So, is this how you feel when I say I have a plan and don't really expand on the plan and just tell you?
I just explained the entire plan.
I know, but I
just explained it.
I mean, you did, but like, I also just feel like I feel like I'm signing up for more work now. Is this how it feels?
No. It is. It's definitely more work. But
so wait. Before you, is what you're about to do? What I do to you when I try to explain to you? It's more work, but you're gonna love it.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So they won't be long podcasts. That's the cool part. And so we'll pick a match. I'll pick a match. You won't pick a match. I'll pick a match. And I'll give you the breakdown before the match. We'll both pull up our WWE networks. We'll play it. We'll have the volume on low so only we can hear it. It won't pick up on the mics. And we can just talk about what we're watching. And I'll answer any questions you've got, and we can go from there. And I'll start with a match that I know you'll love.
Okay. All right.
I can tell you the match we're going to start with, actually.
All right, what's the match we're going to start with?
WrestleMania 17, Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, Dudley's, Hardy's, Edge, and Christian.
Oh, nigga.
See? I thought you'd like this.
I remember that match.
Amani, this is all your fault.
God damn it. All right. See, guys. I hate when I say things in passing. I podcast so much. I say things in passing. And I go, oh, yeah, that'd be a great idea. And then it's all like, wait, I actually got to do this.
You all right, let's have a real moment here because people start quoting things back to us on social media that we say. When I turn off this microphone, my brain goes blank. I have no recollection of what we talked about.
I
leave this room and Susan's like, what did you guys talk about? I'm like,
Nigga, I forgot how we started this podcast. I forgot the beginning. I forgot the beginning of the last email. All right, like no.
There's another. Let's read the next email. Let's move on before we get too lost.
So David writes in, "Hey, I know with all the comic book TV shows that you guys have released in the past 6 years, it can be hard to keep up. With Marvel alone, you've got Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Legion, the Gifted, the Defenders, Inhumans, the Punisher, Runaways, and Cloak and Dagger. How would you rank the Marvel shows you've seen? Okay, first of all, just you listing them all out made me tired.
Right. I'm exhausted.
Second, because again, for some reason, the forwarding emails didn't work, so I'll go for this. I'll go first because Deepam didn't get a chance to think about these. So I always say this, like, it's hard for me to rank shows like this, especially when I really, because for the most part, I enjoy almost all of these shows. But I do think there are some, like, there are definitely some things you can get on the high and low end. I think we can all agree that the worst show is The Inhumans.
I'm so glad. Yeah. Okay. We're
like,
there.
Yeah, I think across the board, all of us can all come together as one. You know,
and I'm the only person in America, to my knowledge, who defended parts of that show.
No, there are actually people I know that did actually.
Well, they're dumb too.
Right.
It was bad.
Because you know what it is? It was that idea of you wanting to be good, and you're like, there's got to be a plan. Like, the entire time we're watching Inhumans, you're going, this part of the plan, right? They're gonna surprise you.
You know what it is? It's you after Man of Steel. Let's move on.
I was gonna bring that up. But I was like, you know what? We're trying to have a good show. For the best, I think that obviously for me, and I think, you know, I put this is like 1A, 1B, and 1C for me. It's Agent of Shield, The Gifted / Legion. I haven't seen Legion, but so many people talk about the Legion and how good it is. And if it's anything like The Gifted, I know it's got to be up there too. And then Daredevil season 3, I think are probably the top three.
Have you seen Runaways yet?
I haven't. So I haven't seen Runaways.
We watched Runaways over break. I really like Runaways. I've seen just 1 and 2. I really like Runaways. But I think you're right. I think my tops, if I was going to go ahead and do my tops, I'd say Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a whole, because I'm not picking a season there. You can't make me. Jessica Jones season 1.
Yeah,
was fantastic.
Yeah.
Runaway season 1's really good. Daredevil season 3, of course. Obviously, I don't know. They're all so good. Like, they're all good in different ways. Like, the things I like about The Gifted, the things I like about Jessica Jones.
They all complement each other. They all fill a different need.
I can say the ones I didn't like, I can say that I probably won't go back and watch again, would be Inhumans, obviously. Luke Cage season 1, I'll never watch again. I watched it once, I'll never watch it again. Jessica Jones season 2, it just didn't click with me. It's probably it. Everything else I'm watching. I've watched Iron Fist season 1 and 2 more than once.
Yeah, I say an underrated, and I actually want to go back and rewatch this, Agent Carter 1 and 2, season 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I really want to, I kind of almost want to rewatch Agent Carter before the next seasons of Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm if I can find some time, they're not. I think it's only like 10 episodes each for both of them.
I think so too. I think you're
so
right.
So I might go back and rewatch Agent Carter, but Agent Carter was just such a fun show, and I really, really.
Or you could just watch Fringe or Dollhouse.
What are those?
Or Young Justice.
What are those? I don't understand.
See, I knew you hadn't watched Young Justice.
I was. Lies. Lies. God damn it! You know, you guys are going to end this inside joke later on, but like. These are lies and slander that are coming.
Got it.
But so this is not a live action one, but I did want to bring this up. Like, Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes is a cartoon, and Marvel doesn't always get the attention for. I know they do have some other show, like I think it was Spectacular Spider-Man was really good.
The same era, yeah.
Yeah, but like, I really love that Earth Mightiest Heroes Avengers cartoon. It was really, really good.
Okay. Okay, so let me explain what happened to both, because EMH and Spider-Man each got 2 seasons.
Yeah.
And here's why. So I think it was the time of the Disney purchase, and for the longest time after Disney purchase, the animation rights were still held by other studios, Sony in particular. And when the rights reverted, they weren't like, oh, we told two great seasons of amazing stories, we should probably build those and make them more. No, they did Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Assemble. And I'm sure there are people who like those shows.
They're not like the originals. They're not the same.
They're not. They're just not. And it's. I haven't watched either one of them out of sheer just like I'm a child. But
like,
yeah,
Earth Mightiest Heroes was great. Just the opening for Earth Mightiest Heroes was so good. Like I love. Like, see, if you have not watched Earth Mightiest Heroes, and that might maybe at some point I'll find where those are. I don't even know where you can stream them. Usually you can get it on Netflix.
You can't.
Right, you can't get them anywhere now. So I got to find it. I want to watch it again and talk about that, because it was great. Earth Mightiest.
I might have. We should talk about Spectacular Spider-Man if you want to catch up on that.
Yeah. So, all right. So that's why I ranked this. Like I said, I think, honestly, if you take out some of the stuff that's bad, like, we're in a good place with DC and Marvel TV live action TV shows. Like, there's more good than bad. I mean, we talk about the bad, like, Gotham's finally fucking ending, and I can't stand Titans. And for anybody who thinks that we have a Marvel bias, go and listen to, if you can, find them, go listen to our Inhumans reviews. You will see. We're not always biased. And D-Bomb liked it more than, not even liked it more.
I tried really hard because I felt like someone had to.
He was trying hard, but I even think when we got the last episode, you were like, I can't defend this bullshit. I can't.
Why try? They don't want to defend themselves.
Right. It's like, they're not even trying themselves. It's like, you know, but we get more good than bad. You have the entire Arrowverse, you know? And even though there's the different varying quality in that, it's still more good than bad. We have Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. You have Runaways. You have, I mean, say what you want about the Netflix shows. It's like they served a purpose. And honestly, you know, and this is getting into the topics. When you see what they're, you know, Kevin Feige has come out and said that, you know, the Disney Plus shows that they're going to be putting out, the MCU shows, are going to be directly connected to the MCU. So I really feel that we're finally going to get those streaming shows that people really wanted from Netflix that just weren't going to happen because Ike was in charge. You're going to finally get those shows now on TV. And I'm really, really excited to see what they do there. And yeah, I'm buying Disney Plus. Like, it's just going to happen.
Oh yeah. It's getting perched.
Yeah. It just has to happen. So.
Yeah.
All right, so let's jump into some of these topics, and let's start with the most recent thing that just happened. The Oscars happened, and it was actually a pretty good Oscars for comic movies, outside of the top of the thing with Green Book and shit like that. But overall, it was pretty good. Like, the Marvel Studios gets its first Oscars, and it won the three categories I thought that they were in the best position to win. It won Best Original Score, got Best Costume Design. You got two black women that won. The first two Marvel Studios wins in Oscars are to black women. Ruth Carter wins for Best Costume Design, and Hannah Beechler wins for Best Production Design. And then the film still got nominated for Best Picture, which is still a huge accomplishment in and of itself. And I think that's a huge fucking win. Not just for the Marvel Studios, but for comic book films in general.
So. Couldn't agree more. It's something you and I have said for a long time, that comics are art. And we can both point at things like whatever Tom King's doing with our emotions to prove that. But it's the first time that the first time the world's listened when someone said comic book films are also art.
Right.
And
yep,
I think that really matters on a large scale.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be no shock, but Into the Spider-Verse won Best Animated Film, and it should.
It's so crazy. I never even saw Fantastic Four 2, the animated version. I'm sure it's good. I just haven't seen it. It's on Netflix. I could watch it tonight, and I won't, but I should, because I think it's good. But I'm surprised because, with all the hype for Incredibles, it's been almost, over 10 years for Incredibles. For them to do what they did and not come with the Oscars, got to be a huge disappointment for them. But at the same time, Spider-Man made me cry. So,
I'll say this. I think the thing about Into the Spider-Verse was that it's an animated film, and not just the fact that it was a good story, stuff like that. It was a different anime. Like, I'm not going to lie. So we talk about Best Picture, and everybody's so focused on Best Picture and Black Panther to be nominated, but... And even in our critics, thing, we didn't really focus on this, but I have to say that animated film category was a stacked category, because every single one of those films could have won, and it really wouldn't have been a disappointment if you take Into the Spider-Verse out, right? Ralph Breaks the Internet 2 got great reviews. Incredibles 2 got great reviews, and people loved that. Isle of Dogs was something that, you know, nobody really talks about, was also a really great film. And it looked different than everything else. And I believe that's a Wes Anderson film. Like, those three films right there, that's a powerhouse of anybody could have won that category. But then you get into the Spider-Verse, and it's such a different looking animation film. And it's got a story, and it gives you all these Spider-Verse characters. It gives you, it centers on Miles Morales. It has all those beats. It was no doubt it was going to win, because it had to, because it really was not just the best animated film of the year. It was probably the best film of the year. And the only reason why it didn't get nominated for best film is because it was animated, and they just didn't want to do that. But yeah, it was. I'm really excited. I'm really happy. I'm really glad that it won. And it was, again, last year was a big year for comic book films. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I agree with all of them or not, every film last year did great financially. You know, and comic book films own 2018. They just fucking did. So, I'm really happy with how that turned out, and I look forward to seeing everybody stepping their game up the next year.
100%. This is one of those things where competition breeds results, and I think that Black Panther is the first of many of these movies, I keep calling them books, to get this kind of recognition.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Let's see, what's the next thing? I'm trying to. Oh, here we go. I got it. All right, so speaking of, let's get into the discussion point I was going to have here. So speaking of films that made money financially that I might not have agreed with, I know today they announced that Aquaman 2 will get its official release date. I think it's December 16th, 2022. And this is something that was also mentioned at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the month, was that it's going to be an Aquaman spinoff they're looking into. Called The Trench.
I know Aquaman made $1 billion, and I know I refuse to see it, but if you want me to believe this shit, I better start filming, because I don't care how many movies do well for you. Right now, the number is 2. Show me, DC. I don't believe you need more people. Sorry.
So here's... and this goes back to what I was saying before about realizing that at this point, I have to accept that these movies aren't for me. Because we're saying that they only have a successful 2 film. But it's technically more than that. Because as much as BVS was some hot fucking garbage, still made over $800 million. You know, Suicide Squad made over $700 million. And they'll never, you know, the Snyder folks will never let you forget, it has an Oscar. It's an Oscar-winning film. You know? Ugh. You're right. I think it was like costumes. I don't know. I can't remember what exactly it was for, but it's got an Oscar, right? And so when you take out the only film that they've done that isn't, if you don't include what you should include, but don't include Green Lantern, the only film that hasn't done its money and made its money financially for them is Justice League. So so we're now looking at this 8 years, right? You know, 5 years if you go with Man of Steel being the start of the DCEU. We're 5 years in, and the films still make money. Shit, Aquaman made $1 billion, and I still think the film is not a good film, but it made $1 billion. And if you look over at Sony, same thing happened with Sony, where they had Venom somehow made over $800 million fucking dollars. So at this point, I just have to go, they're not for me, so I don't know. This Trench movie sounds like a terrible idea, but when we think about what we were saying before, from a Warner Brothers point of view, it's brilliant. Yeah, you got to do it. You have to do a Trench movie. You just made $1 billion for Aquaman. Yeah, and I was thinking about this on the way home. When I look at every decision and everything I've hated about what DC has done, when you look at it from the point of view of, oh, this is all because they not just have a, they don't, it's not that they don't have a Kevin Feige, they don't have a producer. they don't have anybody sitting there who comes out. Think about this. Kevin Feige came here recently, and I don't have the article in front of me because I wasn't going to bring it up here. But he somebody asked him about the Eternals movie, and he gave us some answers. Hey, yeah, we're looking at this, blah blah blah. We're doing this, blah blah. Right? And somebody asked about Captain Marvel. Somebody asked about this. Whenever you ask about a film, who answers? Kevin Feige answered. Rarely do you, like, you'll get some interviews with the directors, but rarely it's the directors that are forced to answer questions about larger things, because Kevin Feige is the one that knows everything and sees how everything is going, and he can answer the questions, right? So there's no confusion what goes on. Now look over at WB, what happens with DC, right? Who's the one that has to answer all the questions? It's the directors. And it's not fair to them. This happened recently with who's the director of Shazam? Is it Paul Sandberg, I think?
I honestly don't remember.
Hold on. Let me
it's another movie I'm not gonna see.
I see these because honestly, I see these all because they're free. David S. Sandberg, right? He had to come out and he had to answer people's questions because people have been demanding, hey, what's going on with Shazam? Why aren't we seeing another trailer? So he had to come out and, like, I think he did a video or he did a blog post saying, listen, I don't control when the video, like, he had to come out there and do all of that, right? And I'm like, he shouldn't have to. I'm not gonna lie, these are valid questions that people are asking, like, why isn't there another fucking trailer? But, like, the director of this film should be focusing on getting his film ready, not having to answer these fucking questions that should be handled by the producer or a PR team or somebody else, right? Then James Wan had to come to his defense, and then James Wan was all like, you know, hey, you know, he shouldn't have to answer these questions. People thought that, you know, Aquaman was going to fail because we didn't have a trailer out too late, and we were going up against Mary Poppins, and we came out and we were a $1 billion film. And I wanted to be like, you guys are an exception. Like, by all conventional logic, none of that should have worked. Like, yeah, you guys didn't put out a trailer. You guys were waiting to put out any information on the film. You were going up against a stacked week, two weeks of films, not just Mary Poppins, but before that was Bumblebee. Yeah, all conventional logic says even if your film is good, you're going to siphon off money from each other and you're going to hurt yourselves. You guys succeeded. That's great. But that shouldn't be people. That's not haters. That's not people coming out and trolling. That's people asking legit, going like, you should have a trailer out by now. What the fuck are you doing, right? But it shouldn't be up to the directors to do that. But DC doesn't have, they don't have a guy or a girl or
they don't have a plan.
There's nobody out
there. And so, because there's no plan, there's no way to answer those questions on a larger 30,000 foot scale. There's no way to say, oh, you know, the trench seems like, I haven't seen Aquaman. I don't know how heavily the events of the trench play into the movie. Do they play heavily into them?
I mean, I guess. I guess.
Awesome. So they're building off of possibly a tertiary plot line from the most successful movie. This is effectively their Guardians. This is their heat check after hitting 1 3-pointer. This is a horrible mistake and a massive miscalculation, and I won't be surprised if the project is scuttled.
But here's the thing.
Because that's what DC does. They announce and scuttle. And so people say, oh, this is different now. Aquaman made money. They're still fucking DC. They're still Warner Brothers. These movies, while announced, may never happen. And when you say, T-Palm, you're being pessimistic, how's that Cyborg movie taste? How about them stills from the Flash set? None of this is done until it's done.
Like, I'm looking right now, and it seems like for Aquaman and Shazam, they have... Because, again... You got to look at who the producer is, and I'm looking at the producers. Let me see. It only has two producers. Like, there's Rob Cowan. I think this is for Aquaman. It's Rob Cowan and then Peter Safran. Those are only two producers. You have a bunch of executive producers, but honestly, executive producers are a name only. They don't really, like, Zack Snyder's going to always be an executive producer on these films. Doesn't mean he's actually doing anything, but they're his characters. They're his characters he introduced in his BVS movie. So he's probably got a thing where at least for the next two or three movies that they appear in, he appears as an executive producer, right? But the producers are the ones that actually do it. Like, Kevin Feige is the producer, right? You hear from him. You don't hear from these other guys. You never heard of these names. They don't do interviews. And I think that's the larger problem over there at Warner Brothers, is that, you know, they don't have that person there. You know, Kathleen Kennedy is the one who answers questions about Star Wars.
Right. She runs one voice.
Her voice. There's no voice over there at DC. And, you know, it's kind of funny because it reflects what they do in the comic books, because the comic books are always a voice. I think DC, and I've been getting more into reading DC comics, DC comics really reflect the voice of the creator. Like, it's Peter David's run of Aquaman. You know, it's Jeff Johns' run of The Flash or of Green Lantern. Or it's Scott Snyder's run of this. It's always these things, and it's just that alone, and it doesn't always have to be connected to anything else. Whereas over at Marvel, yeah, you get like Brian Reed's run of Ms. Marvel, but it connects to Chris Claremont's run of Ms. Marvel. Like, there's an overarching theme that's always been there. Doesn't really happen over at DC, and it's not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but it becomes a problem when you're trying to do a movie, right?
Right.
Because then it becomes like, well, what's the story you're trying to tell? And nobody knows. And so, yeah, like, here's the thing. Aquaman made $1 billion. So I didn't think it was going to do $1 billion. I didn't think over at Sony, we didn't even think that Venom was even going to come the fuck out.
Sure.
It made money. So now,
a lot of money.
It made a shit ton of money. But here's my thing. And I believe I'll stand beside this. I was wrong on the small things, but I think large scale, I'll be proven right. Everybody's talking about some, like, I remember when First Class came out, and I fucking hated it. I remember when First Class came out, and people were telling me, what are you wrong with? I remember that spoiler review. Everybody in the spoiler review was telling me, what are you? No, man, it's all right. I like this. I like this. Everybody told me that. And I was like, no, fuck this movie. Go fuck itself. I do not fuck with this shit. And I told them, because they're already going between, is it a reboot or is it a remake? They're not letting you, is it a sequel? They're not telling you this because they don't know there's something. They're making up as they go along. And I told them, listen, one, it's not good, but two, this is not going to be good in the long run. And people didn't care, right?
Right. No, I remember.
So. Do those same people feel that same way now that Dark Phoenix is coming out? Or are they all now on my side going, damn? Because I really believe that WB is operating from the position of, if it makes money, it works.
It makes dollars, it makes sense.
And from the business point of view, they are absolutely right. But from an audience point of view, that is diminishing returns. Because at some point... Correct. At some point, the audience is going to go, but I can get quality too. And you're not giving me quality. This is getting old. We've seen it happen before. X-Men, Transformers. We've seen this happen before. You know, I remember people going, oh, yeah, new Transformer film, $1 billion. Oh, I'm going to keep seeing it. And then The Last Knight comes out and nobody saw it and it crashed and burned. And then Bumblebee comes out, which is actually good. And it's going to make its money back because China's going to save it, but at the same time, made significantly less money than any of the other Transformers films, even though it was good. Because you've already burned through your goodwill. Like, you're going to run
hot. You lose it fast in 2019, y'all.
You're going to burn hot up front. You make that fucking money. But I go back and look at Aquaman. I'm like, Aquaman put a trilogy worth of story into one film in their first go out.
Because they had no confidence in the movie.
What's your second story? What's your second story now? All right, cool.
The Trench.
All right, cool. No, you got it. You got it. You guys got it. Like, it's like when I'm not going to argue with people about, you know, the quality of stuff. Because, again, it's somebody out there. But, like, you know, when I watch other good things and when I read, the character corner has ruined us. Because the character corner... No, because honestly, the character corner forces me to go back and read these books, right? I didn't give a, if I, I actually believe that I did not read all those Aquaman books before seeing the Aquaman movie, I wouldn't have cared. I actually think that. I would have been like, you know what? It's good enough. Fine, fuck it. Honestly, I go back to look at a BVS, and I think that's what happened with BVS. It's like, you know, fuck it. I don't really care that much, so it's good enough at first. But when you start reading the shit and you go, wait, you guys can actually do this? Wait, you guys could have done this? And you decided to do this? Why would you do that? I can't. And like I said, it's hard for me at this point to predict. Like, I don't know what's going to happen with the Captain Marvel box office. Like, it's all the trends are there. It's saying that it might do 150. Here's the thing. At this point, I don't know, because I've reached into a different thing where I see these movies for free. And so for me, my point of view is, like, I don't have to make a decision on my dollars of if I'm going to see this film or not, because I'm going to see it anyway, right? I get to see it regardless. Right. For everybody else, like, you couldn't tell me back in December if people had a choice between Aquaman, Bumblebee, and Mary Poppins that I was going to pick Aquaman after all the shit that's gone up to that point, just to see Jason Momoa where you can see Jason Momoa shirtless 24/7 on the internet. Like, I didn't think people were going to. I'm sorry, I don't. That logic is not. I just can't understand that logic, and so I can't make predictions on how these films are going to do. But I do know at some point, people are going to get sick and tired of not getting quality. It on a long enough timeline, people get sick and tired of that shit, and nobody can, like. I think back to the Venom. People were talking, they're so excited about how much. Oh, it made all this money. You guys wrong. Blah, blah. Okay, was it good though? It wasn't good. So you're gonna give money to Venom 2 now? Like, when does that run out? Like, I don't know. I can't. I'm not in everybody else's pocket. I don't. If you're gonna pay for trash, pay for trash. Here's my thing. I don't pay for trash.
It's true.
I refuse. I absolutely,
like,
refuse.
People notice that we don't review shit we don't like.
My time and my money is, like, I have to review some films because I need to get a quota of films to review.
Oh, I mean, like, our shows. Like, people say, well, like, hate to review certain shows. We only review shows we like. We tap the fuck out as soon as we stop liking it.
Right. I stopped watching Titans because 4 episodes in, I'm like, fuck this shit. I'm not going to watch the rest of this shit.
Watch because I hate myself.
And I'm not going to pay $7.99 for that. At least with you, you were getting Young Justice Outsiders, and there was other things you were getting. Me, I was like, yo, I'm not going to watch any of this shit right now, so fuck it. And I've heard good things about Doom Patrol, but I'll wait until the season's done.
I'll never know.
No, I'll watch it. I'll be perfectly honest. I saw the trailers. It looked like that Grant Morrison run stuff. So I'm going to watch it. I'm gonna watch it. But I'll watch it when it's all out so I can just get a free trial and watch it in a weekend. You know? But I don't know what people are going to pay with their money. I just can't. I don't know how people are going to do that kind of stuff and what people will do with their own fucking money. So go figure. So I have no idea. Like, I can't predict that stuff anymore. But I do know that something making money doesn't mean it's good. And Aquaman and Venom weren't good. And I also know that the studios behind them aren't fans. And they don't have people that are making them films. And I mean, as a producer, the directors and stuff like that can be, but you need a producer who's actually a fan of the work to get the stuff done and get it done right. And because neither Sony nor WB has that, these films that made money, they're going to try to repeat that. And when you try to just repeat what you did to make money, you're not going to make quality. You're just not. So people are going to get what they expect. So it is what it is. I just realized they're not for me. I just can't. I can't do it anymore. Speaking of Captain Marvel, so Rotten Tomatoes had to change their policy because, which they should have done a long time ago. They didn't remove early reviews. What was happening was people were trolling. When you used to go to Rotten Tomatoes, you would see a thing that was like interested in. It would show you a percentage of the people that were interested in seeing such a movie. Well, sexist bigoted trolls were going out there and spamming the Rotten Tomatoes interested in audience score by lowering it. They got it all the way down to, I think, like 27% or something like that. And it was bad faith. And it was all because of one thing. Brie Larson, when, like, I think it was it early? Because early February, she wanted a more impressive, more inclusive press day. She says, about a year ago, I started paying attention to what my press days looked like and the critics reviewing the movies, and noticed it was appeared to be overwhelmingly white male. So I spoke to Dr. Stacy Smith of the USC Annenberg Inclusion Initiative, who put together a study to confirm that. Moving forward, I decided to make sure that my press days were more inclusive. After speaking with you, the film critic Valerie Complex, and a few other women of color, it sounded like across the board they weren't getting the same opportunities as others. When I talked to the facilities that weren't providing it, they all had different excuses. She got backlash for those comments.
Horseshit.
White men started acting like she was saying that she wasn't going to do press days with white men, and she didn't want white men to see their film. It's all horseshit. It's all manufactured. It's all bullshit. She had to clarify her stance, which really wasn't clarifying. It was just basically saying she's looking to include. She's like, what I'm looking for is to bring more seats up to the table. No one is getting their chair taken away. There's not less seats at the table, just more seats at the table.
Which isn't true. Like, I see what she's saying, and I appreciate that she felt the need to walk these things back, but I wish she hadn't. And two, it's not true. People are always about equality and always about equity and always about access until they realize that to level a playing field, you must give up something off your plate. I mixed like three metaphors there, but you know what I'm saying. You cannot say, oh, there's going to matter to be more resources or more opportunities. No, some of those opportunities that you're being afforded due to your privilege have to be taken away and given to those who've gone so long without. And that's where usually their magnanimity stops, where, wait, I got to give something up?
Yep.
But this is real. Like, she's not wrong. There need to be fewer white male critics. Does that mean you need to find a new line of work? Yep. You just look at the guy who got replaced by an assembly line. Sorry, go learn your trade. I don't want to hear it. And if someone says, hey, we've got enough, whenever we get to that tipping point where it's enough black male voices and nerdery or comics and whatnot, we won't be the first to leave, because I don't think we're really good at this. But if it comes down to it, I'll step the fuck aside.
There's a reason why more than half the voices on MTR are women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a reason for that. Like, being inclusive. Diversity is just a buzzword. Being inclusive actually is active. And the fact that, and again, these trolls led by Ethan Van Shriver have been after Brie Larson in this movie since the beginning.
Yep.
So, and they've been doing the childish things of trying to lower the score, because they're literally, they are afraid that it's going to do, like, I think right now the tracking is right between $120 and $150 million opening weekend, and they are definitely afraid that the film will do well.
It's going to do well.
Right. All the indications are that it will do well. You know, we've seen some early reactions that say people seem to like the film. So it's, and it shouldn't matter. It really shouldn't. But, like, it matters to them. And it, like you said, this whole thing has just been draining and ugly, and I'm just so fucking tired of it. I'm just tired. You know? You know, I think what's his name? Zachary Levi had to come out and did a video telling people to stop taking shots at Brie Larson and Captain Marvel, which is a stand-up thing to do, you know?
Oh, very, that's the first time I was like, I might see Shazam.
Yeah.
So I won't, but I thought it.
Baby steps. Baby steps. But, like, you know, the fact that you have to do this, and so Rotten Tomatoes basically has removed the ability to put in, or they need to remove the whole audience score thing to begin with, because it's dumb. And it's being misused. And at this point, we are in the age of the troll online now. And I think that sites and social media have to now keep that in mind, that at first when we started doing the internet and started having social media and these things, it worked for the most part because there weren't the number of good actors outweighed or at least drowned out the bad actors. But at this nowadays, you're getting people that literally they are professional trolls.
Well, some of them are people and some of them are automated bad actors. It's not hard to code a bot to do these things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm just tired. I'm tired of this. But I will say this. If the Captain Marvel numbers hold and this film does numbers next weekend, the following week I will be spending all week in Ethan Van Shriver's mentions until he blocked me. So then you guys
it shouldn't take long. Those snowflakes are pretty fragile.
Yeah, they are. All right, last thing before we then get into discussing. Normally we do the poll list, but I think we're just going to be just talking about Tom King. We're replacing the poll list with a Tom King discussion at the end of this. But I want to talk about the state of the Arrowverse, because there's been a lot of talk right now about Arrow and Legends potentially ending after next season. And Supergirl might be gone as well. First thing I want to say is they've all been renewed for their next season. So can we table this almost?
Yeah, can we do this later, guys? Like, I get we're all kind of addicted to information, but come on. Can we enjoy what we got? We've still got half of three halves because Legends isn't back yet.
Right.
Halves of seasons of shows that we review. Supergirl's still coming back. Black Lightning, I guess, is still happening. I'm not sure if we're still reviewing it. But these are shows that let's worry about tomorrow. You know what that is? You know what I used to say when I was in college, or actually post-college? That's tomorrow Daniel's problem.
Yeah.
These worries, that's tomorrow MTR's problem. Let's enjoy what we have.
Yeah, it's just like, you got to look at this, guys. Like, let's say that all these shows end after next season, right? That means you've gotten 5 seasons of Legends of Tomorrow.
Which is insane. Which is a spinoff show created from B characters from these collected shows.
Yeah. 8 seasons of Arrow. 6 seasons of The Flash. And then this would be, 4 or 5 seasons of Supergirl, because Supergirl started on CBS and then moved over. Let's say all those things end. Like, I feel like everybody's looking at them like, yeah, it'll be 5 seasons of Supergirl. Like, that means, first of all of the shows have hit syndication. So, they're set.
Yep.
Right? So, they're all set. Guys, that's a win. Like, if they wipe out all of these shows in this season, the Arrowverse leaves on a positive note, because they were able to bring all these shows together. But the other thing, too, is, and it really is kind of too early to have this discussion, but I say this to kind of calm people down. We already know it's not the end. We already know this. Like, I can't remember who it was, but the guy came out and was like, I don't know if it was CWTV or somebody from WBTV was basically like, we are fully committed to the superhero shows we're doing, and we will be doing them for a long time.
Bathtub full of money.
Right. It's like, because we already, here's the thing. We already know you're getting one new show in the Batwoman show. They're doing that. There's this talk about doing a Superman show, you know? So let's say, and then you got this whole big thing of Crisis on Infinite Earth is the major crossover for next season, which means you could literally wipe out everything out and do a whole new slate of shows in this universe and keep it moving. Why do we care who it is? Why do we care if these shows, all these shows end after next season? That means you can start again from scratch and go right into the next thing and keep it moving. All right, I'm here for the ride. As far as I'm concerned, this universe is self-contained. You can mix and match, add in new shows, replace, take a show out here, put a new one in, and go from there. Like, let's go. Like, let's everybody calm down. Like, really take a step back and think about how many seasons we are getting for all this stuff. They have already been confirmed for their next season, set of seasons. If they end after that, okay.
What a ride. What? How lucky are we to have had these shows for as long as we have?
8 seasons of
Arrow. Legends is going to hit 5 seasons.
Right.
That's fucking nuts.
We were thinking about not reviewing Legends after into season 1. We thought we were done. And they redefined it and came back. And we're like, man, 5 seasons of Arrows. I mean, 5 seasons of Legends. 8 seasons of Arrow. I cannot stress it. 8. You know what? After 8 seasons, Stephen Amell and them, they deserve a break. They deserve to take some time. Because here's the other thing, too, is like, even if they end it, it doesn't mean the characters won't come back in some form. It doesn't mean that you won't come back and do a crossover or do a cameo or something like that. You get all these things. Like I said, the way they're setting up this for this last season of Arrow, we could do a time jump, and next thing you know, we're doing Young Justice in the future. Who the fuck knows? Just everybody calm down. It'll be okay. It will be okay. All right, last thing before we get out of here. Like I said, this has been a kind of a short mailbag. Short months, short mailbag.
Fair.
But it's been short, but because... Tom King. What is Tom King doing to us, man? I finally caught up on this Batman. And I also caught up and read Heroes in Crisis. And what am I supposed to do with this, man?
I read Heroes in Crisis before going to work this morning, and that was a huge fucking mistake.
So explain to people what Heroes in Crisis is, because it's
I don't
so
want
fun.
To.
It's so
funny. Okay, so Heroes in Crisis is a miniseries about a hidden aspect of the heroes of the DC universe. So a lot of bad shit happens to the heroes of these universes. That's why we buy the books. But what's been revealed via Tom King is that there is a place in the middle of the country called Sanctuary. It is manned by Superman robots programmed to be as sensitive and caring as Wonder Woman. And it's has rooms where you can have a holographic deal with any issues you have. It's where heroes go and they unleash their souls. It's where they unburden themselves of the weight that they carry from the jobs that they do. Well, the series starts off with a series of murders in Sanctuary, and the files, which are so allegedly erased after recording, being released to Lois Lane. So the mystery is twofold. The mystery is, one, who's releasing these files to Lois? Two, who killed everyone? And three, why are Harley Quinn and Booster Gold the only ones left alive?
And when we say kill everybody, kill people, we're not talking about some small names. Wally West, Roy Harper.
Those are the two big names.
You're right. I mean, those are pretty.
I was gonna let you flounder for their name, but I'll cut you off.
Right? No.
Those are the two big names.
But they're the biggest. They're big enough. All right,
dude. They're first generation Titans. Those are huge names.
Right. And it is a fascinating series because and this is what I mean when I say that they've been doing a masterful job with. Excuse me, Rebirth, and especially Tom King and how he's been breaking everything down, because there's a lot of things that just going from the Wally West aspect of it, Wally West coming back in that Rebirth issue, everybody's like so happy, but I think it was the last issue when you see Wally's been going through it because Wally came back and everybody's so happy to have Wally back, but Wally's missing his family.
Even before he knew he was missing his family, he knew something was missing. He felt right. Empty, and this issue. So we're recording on the 27th, and this issue came out today, and so I'm gonna not spoil. I think
no,
but it's
go,
framed.
Go ahead,
it's
go
framed
ahead.
By what's up?
Go ahead, people. If you know, if you don't want to hear, close your ears for 5 minutes.
It's framed by Gnark revealing. So Gnark is an underrated Titan who's actually a caveman who's discovered, who's found in our time.
It's funny because we actually when we did the Teen Titans thing, we actually. I think we covered him. It was funny as shit because it's very, very obscure, but yeah.
But the way they've done it here is that while he's still a caveman, he has the capacity to learn. Like he's quoting Keats and talking about philosophy and how society destroys you because at first you're only worried about dying, and now the society's made you safe. All you worry about is what happens when you're living, and it's so profound and so well done. And Tom King, for those who don't know, Tom King is an ex-CIA operative. He's with a generation of kids and young men and women who on 9/11 said, I have to go defend my country. And he gave 10 years of his life in service to the CIA. We can have larger discussions of what the CIA does, but we can also say that individual agents do their jobs to the best of their ability. This book was written because Tom King said he was profoundly messed up on the things he knows and the things he did while in that service.
Yo,
this is the DCU processing trauma. This is Tom King processing with us, and it is horrifying because it's real. Because if you've ever gone through something, this last issue, like, it hit, like, Chris, reading like the dueling narratives between Harley Quinn and Wally and Gnarkin between them, I was like, what am I? What? This is a comic book?
Yo, dude, I have to go back and read it all again because it's so dense and heavy, and it hits you so hard. Because it's not just them. You find out that Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman have all gone through Sanctuary themselves. It, again, this is where they go to work out their grief, to go and deal with the stuff they've had to deal with. And when you start thinking about what they've had to deal with, there's a lot. There's some heroes in here who have died and are coming back with the idea, I died. Was it Commander Steel who talked about the idea of
him dying? Like I was, well, that's also interesting, is because they're using this to reframe a lot of DC Universe history. Because yes, Community 2 happened, but if you read Action Comics this week, and I'm probably the only person who did, they spell out the 12 crises that have happened in this new timeline. Mm-hmm. One of them is Convergence, which was when they moved everything to the West Coast. One of them was called a rebirth. They count that as a crisis because things change in their reality. Hmm. And they're discussing here, like, one of these, because they have these little Polaroids from moments in DC Universe history as the covers, and one of them is the death of Jason Todd, or excuse me, the death of Barry Allen,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't happen in the New 52 timeline because none of time has passed. So I think we're getting towards something very big here, because this series is also being picked up on in both Batman and The Flash, the two-parter, the four-parter
So then you get into, so we've already did the Batman, and Flash thing when you did the button, like, and the issues occur. Mm-hmm. Now we're in here, because I caught up on all the Batman. First of all, what's going on in the Batman book is traumatizing, because they're bringing back all this stuff, and I'm like, yo, Bane and Thomas Wayne are running everything, and
because Thomas told him to quit,
right? And Bane, and it goes back to the earlier Batman, Tom King's series, where he was I am Bane, I am Suicide, storyline, and it comes all the way to that, and now this is Bane going back to trying to break the bat, and it's fucking working. And what killed me,
I thought he would.
Oh, whew, bruh. He is, whew, boy. Like, it's getting there. And so that story's continuing. But right when the story continues, they kind of, I think they do a time jump so they can deal with this whole, the price. I think that's what it's called.
The price.
And it happens before
the Scarecrow thing happens.
Okay. So they're dealing with this idea of, again, bringing back the character they brought back in the first issues of Tom King's run, which is Gotham. Gotham and Gotham Girl, and holy shit, man! Like, I've read the last. Did you read the last issue of The Flash today?
Yeah,
nigga.
This is high level stuff. Like, the beginning of the Heroes in Crisis is them asking the three of them, "How many people have you saved?" I don't like to talk about that. All he says, whatever the number is, it should have been higher. Like, and then you get Gnark reading Keats. Like, it's, I don't, it's one of those things where it's, I'm impressed they pulled it off.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Really impressed they pulled this off.
Whew, yeah, catching up on the Batman stuff and then reading the price and reading the price in conjunction with Heroes in Crisis. Because they're trying to, they're still trying to solve the, you know, because, you know, as far as Barry knows, Wally is dead, and I mean, there's some other thing to happen in there. You kind of say maybe there's like something else going on here, but Batman and them are also trying to stop Gotham Girl, who has shown up. And remember, the whole thing is she uses her power, she's gonna die. So Batman's literally over here trying to stop her and save her while also dealing with Barry, who is also kind of losing it. And you also get this idea of Batman's secrets kind of getting him in trouble again. Like I think I can't remember what Hero on Crisis issue it is, but it's the one where they're fighting Harley. And before then, like Superman and Wonder Woman talking to Batman, like, you probably got kryptonite in your belt. And he's like, I don't have kryptonite in my belt. And when Harley's fighting him, she gets a hold of Wonder Woman's lasso and uses it on Batman. He's like, I know you got something in that utility belt that can help me. He's like, there's kryptonite in the, and he's like, in my belt pocket. And Wonder Woman's like, she's like, Batman, don't you dare. It's like, there's kryptonite in the pocket. I'm like, this motherfucker's always lying, yo. He's always lying.
He's Batman. Of course he's lying.
But and nothing happens in there. But when you read the price, you can see that Barry in the flat is kind of fed up with it. It's like, yo, your lies are causing people things. Like, you know more than you're telling people. And it's such a good juxtaposition of the button when you had Bruce and Barry working together, because they're both like Barry is a CSI and Bruce is a detective. So them working together, you're like, oh, okay, cool. This one though, you kind of feel like they're at odds almost, and like you can see that there's tension there. And then when you get that final panel where they kind of in the near future, where's Bruce talking to Superman, and Superman's like, we should bring Barry in on this. You know, he's a good CSI. And Bruce is kind of looking at, like, they're looking at another mystery. Like, there's something big coming around the corner. And Heroes in Crisis, mm-hmm. and this Batman run, like, usually.
And Doomsday Clock, and Doomsday, if you're reading Action Comics, so in Action Comics, someone's taking down every spy organization on the planet. DEO, the Suicide Squad, everyone, Argus, everyone's down. And Amanda Waller comes to Clark Kent and his apartment and says, Leviathan is struck. We need Superman. Cobra's been annihilated. Every organization on the planet's been wiped out. And so they're building something huge. That's the Bendis thing that's building there. They're building something massive over Batman. Detective Comics 1000 next month. And I've read the Bendis stories already out. It's wonderful and beautiful. And it's a future telling of a Penguin story. And this is going to be a big, big 2019 for DC Comics. I'm excited for. If you aren't reading Young Justice, a lot of the reshuffling of the universe is being born up there as well. They mentioned the seven crises. There's a lot of stuff that's being seeded in these books that I think is going to build to a larger tapestry of what the DC universe is now. It's going to be more explicit once the big events come this summer and the year of the villain truly begins.
Yeah,
I feel like I was just ad copy right there.
Yeah, I'm very excited for what's going to happen, because it does finally, and I don't normally feel this way, but I just feel like all these individual books that have their own stories are building to one larger thing, which feels more Marvel than DC. But I like it, because it keeps me engaged, and it's going to get me to buy all these fucking books to keep up and read. You know, again, the story and what he's doing to deconstruct in Batman right now, like, the Batman Annual, when you have is the one where Alfred is kind of like from Alfred's point of view, and Alfred's kind of going to save Bruce, and he's basically like, and I think Leslie Thompson asks, was like, why are you doing? Like, I understand why Bruce is doing this. Why are you doing? He's like, because I don't ever want to get the call. I don't want to get that call again. You know, and so it's just, oh man, I love this. I love what's going on. I love the fact that you're seeing. After the fear toxin, this has been the nightmare thing. Has been going like three issues for them, I think.
Yep.
It's been three issues of Batman gets dosed, and now you have Batman, you know, dealing with all basically everything that he's had to deal with and going on with. Like the idea of, like, people got really upset when Selina left, but it's like, that seems like it's also part of the story. It's all part of the
fight. That was part of Bane's plan.
Part of the plan. Like, it's all there. You know, Bane again. Bane is breaking the bat for real this time. And it is, yeah. I'm like I said, this has been my focus, you know, so far. Like, I'm really excited about War of the Realms and what's happening over in Marvel, stuff like that. But I really wanted to take some time to talk about this Tom King stuff. I'm not sure if it's on now, but I believe the Tom King sale might still be on. You can get the first three issues of Heroes in Crisis for 99 cents.
Go do it right now. I'm going to read parts of this issue six, and it's just part of the Gnark scenes, which aren't pivotal to the plot, but they more speak to the theme. It's he has two quick scenes of him debating Rousseau versus Hobbes as far as ethics and society and the purpose of it. And it ends with him saying, question is old day better than new day? Gnark not sure. This was most day and old day. You want eat, he want eat, so fight. You win, you eat. He win, he eat. In old days, death always there, so Gnark worry about death. New day, life always there, so now Gnark worry about life. And the next scene is Gnark know. Gnark can intellectualize problem to avoid it. Hobbes, Rousseau, old dead men arguing. And Gnark not dead. Gnark misses old days, misses animals and fighting and blood on tongue, misses grass or sky and sky, but it not good or bad. Gnark can see stars, infinite, glorious, incomprehensible, conquering stars. Gnark could not read Keats. No, not good or bad, just gone. Like, what the? That's a comic book?
Yo,
The caveman?
Not just that, but Superman's speech. Because now that the public is aware, six to wary, and they're kind of aware of kind of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so Superman basically gives this speech to kind of calm everybody down, to basically explain why superheroes need sanctuary. Because it's like, wait, if superheroes are going to sanctuary because they've seen some shit and it might fuck with them mentally, it's like, you're supposed to be our heroes. You're supposed to be above that. Should we be worried? Because now that means you're like us with superpowers. And his speech... Wow. Like you said, like it feels like this is it's Tom King working out his own issues through superheroes, but it can affect, like, I feel like this is something you read if you've ever gone through some shit. Because it's like what Superman says, and it's so fucking true. It is just like, you know, they make these sacrifices. So yes, we need this to kind of, you know, to go on,
survive,
because
it's honestly the price that they talk about.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just holy shit, man! Like,
so good,
right? I don't know what else you could do. Like, let me see if I'm gonna try to see if I can find some of these things. The Superman thing was just so good, and it would go in.
At the end of issue six, you see Gnark during the murders, and he says he's carrying out the Protector. If you wonder who the Protector is, the Protector was a palette swap of Robin who appeared in the Hostess Kick ads for Teen Titans in the 60s and 70s. And he's been picked up in, like, other media, I think, twice, once in an event on a Teen Titans annual, and I think once in another Teen Titans issue. But he's firmly in DC continuity here, and he's dying. And he's dying in the caveman's arm. The caveman says, don't be scared. We Plato say life being in cave, watching shadows on wall. Goal of life, leave cave, see what made shadow. Gnark lived in cave, looking at shadows on wall. Did Gnark leave cave, Gnark see all world. Did Gnark think Plato wrong, goal not leave cave. Goal no cave there, world there, and shadows are everywhere. But maybe Gnark overthink it. Like what? Like what? What?
So here's part of the Superman speech. It says, I have seen time and again my colleagues, my super friends, these true heroes, bearing the same marvelous burden, engaged in the same endless struggle. I have watched persons from every country, every background, rise with power to battle the worst evil, to shout in the face of ignorance and defeat that there shall be another day of dignity for our world. There shall be another day of honor for our people. Battling through unimaginable torment, they have taken their place along the barriers that divide us from the chaos and the death. They have stared into the certainty of annihilation, and they have smiled, and they have laughed, and they have said simply, calmly, and confidently, though you break my body, I will stand. Though you silence my voice, I will speak. Though you bring my death, I will live. This is my home, it is my care, and though you seek its destruction, I am here. And today, by God, it will not fall. What you must know, what I know, I want you to understand, what you have to understand, is that they do this in full knowledge of the pain they will incur. The scars they will collect, the nightmares the nightmares they will forever endure. So yes, Sanctuary exists. It exists to help those heroes recover from this endless pain. To help them recognize themselves under these scars, to help them wake from these nightmares. But existence should not scare you. On the contrary, it should comfort you. This suffering, this need for healing, is not a mark of a madman. It is the wound of a warrior. It is a sign of love of truth, their hunger for justice, and their fight for the American way. Read Heroes in Crisis, guys.
Please.
It's like, this is the reason why I just said we're not going to do a poll list. We're just going to talk about, like, Tom King and Heroes in Crisis right now, because I was reading the Batman stuff and I saw that come up. I was like, wait, I'm not, the price, what, how does, I got to read Heroes in Crisis. So I went and got it, read it, and now I'm like, holy shit.
And it ruined your day.
It did ruin my day. It's, good God.
I like a comic that can ruin my day, man. That's a powerful book.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. So, all right. That's it. I got to get in this. I got to get up early in the morning. So, folks, thank you very much for listening. Again, if you guys want to send us an email for the end of March, mailback at mtrnetwork.net. We had one more email. I think it was from Latrell. I didn't read it because it had a gifted spoiler in it. And I know Deepom hasn't seen the David. I hadn't either. So when I realized it had gifted spoilers, and I stopped reading it. What we'll do is when we do the gifted review, I'll read your email then, so you don't have to wait until the end of March for us to discuss it then. Yeah, folks. So again, save the date. March 15th is when the tickets for our in-game screeners on in LA and DC will go on sale. Just stay tuned. We'll make sure we'll get the link out. It's probably noon on the 15th. So just stay tuned for that. And again, folks, thank you guys very much for listening. And until next time, we're out of here. Peace.